Hi, I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Monday, the 12th of July. Time magazine had an interesting piece last week, The Only Child Myth. The author, Lauren Sandler, begins the article this way. It's a conversation I have most weeks, if not most days. This time it happens when my two-year-old daughter and I are buying milk at the supermarket. The cashiers fawn over her pink cheeks, and then I endure the usual dialogue. You're first? Yep. Another one coming soon? Nope, it might just be this one. You'll have more. You'll see. I offer no retort, but if I did, I'd start by asking these young minimum wage earners to consider the following. The U.S. Department of Agriculture reports that the average child in the U.S. costs his or her parents about $286,050 before college. Those costs have risen during the recession. It's a marvel to me these days that anyone can manage a second child, forget about a third. Perhaps the reason that people are looking at her and people who have one child is because for a long time there's been a stigma associated with one child. They're selfish, they get too much attention, they're lonely, they don't know how to function in the world. Our guest this hour is here to dispel some of those stigmas. Tony Falbo is a professor of educational psychology and sociology at the University of Texas at Austin and the author of The Single Child. She has been devoting about 30 years to myth-busting, focusing on only children and one-child families. Her exhaustive research has led her to doubt the credulity of many birth order pop psych books on the market these days, and also to be the most often quoted expert in the world on a topic that continues to foster lively debate. She is an only child herself and the mother of an only child. Our phone number, I think we'll get a lot of calls on this because we're all either only children or we're not, so we have ideas about it. 1-800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. If you'd like to send us an email, it is talk@wpr.org. Professor, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
What's interesting to me is I had no idea that these stigmas about only children went back so long because people wrote about them about 100 years ago and they just kind of stuck.
That's right. And I think actually the view that only children are lonely and maladjusted probably predates that. I have a colleague here at the University of Texas who told me that Juliet of Romeo and Juliet was an only child. And at least she's portrayed as that at the very end of the play. And usually Shakespeare's plays are based on legends that were available even then. So this view that somehow it's just not right to have one child and it's a great tragedy to have just one child has been around for a long time.
How many of us, and maybe this varies widely from country to country, and I'm sure you have an international perspective, are we seeing a great increase in the number of one-child families in America simply because of the economy?
That's hard to say. You know, people can always have another child, and nowadays the people have children into their 40s, and so, you know, you may have one and then maybe 10 years later have another one. So, you know, it's hard to say now that people end up with just one children, more of them now than in the past. So, you know, it's certainly a possibility. I'd say that's, you know, something that people are thinking about more than they used to.
You are an only child yourself, and you're the mother of an only child. Obviously, your experience piqued your interest in this topic.
Right. Growing up as an only child, I did hear the stereotype. And people would say to me when I was a kid, you know, you don't act like an only child. Like, why is that? What's wrong with you? And at the time, I had no idea what they were talking about because I also thought I was just an average kid. My mother really pushed me out the door all the time to play with my friends. And even if I didn't want to, by nature, I wanted to sit and read. But my mother said, no, you have to go outside and be active. And I think just that kind of experience year in, year out of being forced to play with my peers is probably a benefit to me.
Mm-hmm. And what about your child? Did you have a daughter or a son?
We adopted a daughter from Korea.
Uh-huh. And did you do the same for her? Did you urge her to engage in activities outside with other children?
Well, yes, we did. You know, it's a times have changed. You know, I've just, graduated into the senior citizen ranks. And when I was a kid, it really was possible to push your kid out the door and they'd go play with neighborhood children. And that's just not so common anymore. When my daughter was a kid, there were, where we lived, several children her age, and she did play around the neighborhood. And I really encouraged that, and I think that helped her a lot. We moved to another area, and there weren't that many children who lived there. And, you know, then we had to do more activities like a sports team and, you know, kind of orchestrated her peer contact. It wasn't as easy when we moved to a different neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. The book, The Single Child Family, revealed single children are not disadvantaged. They, in fact, seem to enjoy slight advantages in certain areas. What are those?
Well, on average, and that's not to say each and every only child has this benefit, but on average, only children have small benefits in terms of academic achievement. You know, they get more education, years of education on average, and they have maybe a higher grade point average on average. So I think that's one of the findings that generally we can talk about.
And why is that? Why would they have better academic achievement?
I think there's several reasons that all flow together. On average, you'd have parents who just have one kid haven't had the benefit of multiple children. And I think one of the things that parents learn is they have more another and another and another child is that they only have so much control over how much the child learns and how the child behaves. Whereas when you just have one child, you still are thinking that, oh, yes, well, you know, she's going to learn how to tie her shoelaces anytime now and be able to wipe her own nose anytime now and get her homework done all by herself anytime now. And I think that these high expectations that parents of only children maintain over the years sort of sets up a high achievement norm for only children. They're just always being pushed a little. Whereas if you're a later born from a larger family, your parents have sort of relaxed on this and understand that these things take time, they will eventually happen, but you're not going to worry about it. And that, you know, makes for a more relaxed child.
Mm-hmm. You talk about those hopes, though. Isn't that a lot of pressure on a child? You've talked about you've got your only chance for a musical math genius who also knows ballet and how to speak six foreign languages.
Right, right.
And I'm wondering if that doesn't put an enormous amount of pressure on an only child and they may fail.
Yes. Well, certainly you see a lot of that pressure in the People's Republic of China.
Mm.
And that, I think, partially is due to the fact that the government has promoted the one-child policy as part of the shift towards China's power, increasing power in the world. So all of this is seen as parents are supposed to do their part to make sure that China will be number one in the world. So it puts a lot of pressure on the parents, who then put a lot of pressure on their kid to be, you know, super great.
Mm-hmm. And it was horrendous there for a while because they really wanted male children. Has that all changed?
I think there's still a skewed sex ratio. It was extremely skewed early on in the one-child policy, and then it leveled off a bit. But I think there's a long-standing skewness with more males being born than females.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I think that parents worry about, I have two older stepsons and then a younger child who is 11 years younger than the middle boy. So he spent a lot of time as not really an older, only child, but, you know, he was by himself. He was the only child growing up. The one thing that always worried me as a parent, and maybe you as well, is the amount of time, even though you arrange a lot of play dates and they can be extremely social, but the amount of time that the children are essentially by themselves, that you're worried that they're going to be lonely.
Right, and that's one of the interesting phenomena about this. People have actually looked at loneliness. We have scales to measure loneliness, and We don't get higher scores among only children, so they don't, you know, ache from this being aloneness. Now, a little bit of research suggests that, yes, onlys may spend more time alone, but it's not something that is aversive to them. So some of them may then acquire hobbies or interests that being alone is not a problem. And, of course, in this electronic age, you can be alone at home, but with all sorts of other people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of our affiliative tendencies are kind of built in. And, of course, our families can nurture them. Our families and schools can nurture them. And hopefully they do, because generally it's a positive thing to be more affiliative and, you know, get along with other people and so forth. I think that one of the reasons why we don't find that only children in general are lonelier is that to the extent they have more time alone, that they don't learn to find it aversive. They're, you know, it's not something that is a bad experience for them.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting, because we would think that most people would think it would be the opposite, that they're
right.
Suffering, but they're not really suffering.
Right, and I guess there's a lot of variability. I mean, I don't remember when I was a child having a lot of time alone. Maybe it's because my mother was always throwing me out the door and said, go play with your friends, you know. And then I was in, you know, in high school, all sorts of extracurricular activities. And, you know, the time I was alone is when I was studying and doing my schoolwork. And, of course, it's best to be alone then. So
right.
I didn't really feel, you know, isolated at all.
Do only children spend more time with adults? Are they involved more in adult groups, conversations? Do they play more with their parents when they're young?
Well, I assume so. I mean, if you have two parents and just one kid, there's a lot more adult conversation going on because the parents will be speaking to each other in the presence of the child. And so the child is one of the explanations why some studies indicate that only children develop a bigger vocabulary earlier on average is because they're with adults. Now, by the time people with larger numbers of siblings get to be like 17 or so, they've pretty much caught up. You know, because they've had more time to mature themselves. But when you're very young, I think that being around adults more probably promotes certain kinds of intellectual development.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls for our guests. I would think that we'll have many calls because I'm particularly interested in hearing from those of you who were only children or you're raising only children, the stigmas. Do you get that conversation that we led the show with? Oh, what a darling child. When is the second one coming? Is that fairly commonplace? Why is it that we say that? Perhaps you feel that you have particular challenges in raising only children. Why do we have this idea that somewhere it got put in our heads that having all kinds of siblings is absolutely the best way for us to grow up? Are there challenges that only children face? Our guest has studied only children for a long time, and I'm particularly interested in her research in China because, you know, they've had a one-child policy in China for quite some time. She's a professor of educational psychology in the College of Education and faculty research associate in the Population Research Center at the University of Texas at Austin, and she has devoted 30 years to studying only children and one-child families. And here is our phone number for you to join our conversation with Professor Tony Falbo, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. And she is also the author of The Single Child Family. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls, starting with Tammy in Eau Claire. Hi, Tammy.
Hi, yes, I'm here.
Hi, go right ahead.
This is a great topic. I raised an only child. It was a daughter. She is now going to be turned 21 and goes to a very elite private college in Chicago. She hit all the stereotypes, the positive stereotypes of an only child, very high achiever, big vocabulary, tested in, you know, very high levels IQ-wise. And I was blessed because she was the perfect child. But I had discussions with relatives, some of which were not even close to me, about, and the vehemence always surprised me, how I was being selfish towards having another child for my daughter to have a sibling or for me to raise another child, which to me was a really ridiculous argument because I can't be selfish against something that never existed. I never wanted a second child. I was very, like I said, I am lucky. I raised a perfect kid. So it really was surprising to me how many people. In fact, when I had my tubes tied at a fairly early age, and I had to shop for a doctor because they all said the same thing. You could change your mind 10 years from now. But I don't want to be changing diapers when I'm 38. So a decision I've never regretted, and I've been blessed. But I did see both sides of the coin, you know, from having other people say, gee, I can't believe you did that. And I'll take my comments off air.
All right. Thank you, Tammy. Professor Falbo.
Oh, yes. Well, congratulations. Sounds like you have a great daughter, and you've had difficult encounters with relatives and even strangers, as Lauren Sandler reports in her article in Time. I think that what the caller was talking about is pretty typical of many people's experiences, and I think also that health professionals just assume that people will want to change their mind, and so, you know, they might even try to discourage people from, you know, taking various procedures to end their fertility. But, you know, I think that's really up to the individual and probably, you know, shouldn't be automatically discouraged.
Mary Agnes in Elm Grove. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you.
Go right ahead.
Okay, I had a only child at age 21, raised her myself. I'm the oldest of seven, so I did not want to have a passel of children in the house. I saw what my poor mother went through. The only thing I regret now is that her children have no aunts or uncles other than grand aunts and uncles, and cousins are far away because we moved away from original family. Other than that, I have no regrets. We became very close. At times, she was more like a sister than a daughter. So I don't know. I guess there's pros and cons to both. If I had to do it again, I'd probably do the same thing.
And when you mentioned your family that you grew up in, it was not very pleasant to have that many siblings?
It was very difficult financially. My father worked two jobs, so he was very, you know, not home a lot. My mother, I think, struggled. She didn't let us kids see that a lot, but it was lots of things we didn't have.
Mm-hmm. Professor Falbo.
Right. Well, this also sounds like a typical phenomena. I know my parents decided to have just one kid because they had a lot of siblings, and their families had had a lot of financial difficulties. And so, especially my father's family, he was an orphan living on the streets in Minnesota until a social worker nabbed him and said, no, we don't have sweet street children in Minnesota.
Oh, my.
So they found a home for him, and he wasn't appreciative because they forced him to go to school. But, you know, these things are the right way.
Right.
You know, they had a rough early life, and I think that they decided that one was going to be okay for them because they wanted to get their foothold in the economic ladder. Not that they're multimillionaires or anything like that, but at least they have security. And I think that that's certainly an important part of why many people decide just to have one child. I had a question, though, about your daughter's children. I mean, I'm an only child, but my daughter has aunts and uncles and cousins because my husband is the firstborn of six kids. So that's how she got her aunts and uncles and cousins is through the other side.
One of her oldest daughter does not have a father or family in the picture, so she is the one that does not really have anybody except second cousins who live far away.
Yeah,
the other
right.
two younger ones do have cousins that they see on a regular basis. So they are a little more fortunate than the oldest one.
Yeah.
But it's been very nice talking with you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mary Agnes. We go to Tracy
bye-bye.
From Eau Claire. Hi, Tracy.
Hi. Yes, I'm an only child as well, and I think there is a lot of pressure from parents, well, from my parents, there was a lot of pressure to just sort of, I felt scrutinized all the time, that everything was all eyes were on me at all moments, you know. And I think if I'd had brothers and sisters, that I would have been less in the spotlight all the time. But I do feel like there's a lot of times when, you know, and I'm a single adult now, and I'm not married, and so in some ways that served me really well, because I know how to be alone, and I know how to entertain myself, and, you know, and I'm kind of an extrovert, so I still really crave being with people, but when I'm not with people, I know how to entertain myself. And I happen to also be an only grandchild, because my mom was an only child as well. And that's a good deal, being an only grandchild.
Right. Well, it sounds very interesting. So one of the people, one of the images I have of only children is that they have dogs or cats. Do you happen to have any pets?
I do. In fact, I've had smaller pets, like rodents and things in the past, but now I have a dog that I just got last year.
Yeah.
And it is really, really a good thing. She's really good company, and I do really enjoy having her.
Right, right. And so, maybe, I'm sure in Wisconsin or wherever you are, that some place they have, like, dog parks, and
yep.
you can go meet people
yep.
and with their dogs. And, you know, I think that's really a good way to kind of socialize with your pets and everything. And, you know, I think a lot of it is just kind of interacting with people, and then you get to learn about them and explain things about yourself. And, you know, I think just keep at it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Sure,
thanks, Tracy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
There is, well, I'm a dog person too, but there's nothing like a good dog for company.
Yeah, really.
There's nothing like it. Heather in Beaver Dam, hi.
Hi. I have a question, actually. I'm an only child myself as well, and enjoy being an only child. I married a man who's one of eight, so my son has lots of aunts and uncles, so I just heard that discussion, so it does pay off that way for family. But my son, who is nine, he's kind of wise beyond his years. That's what a lot of people tell me, and I think it's because of being an only child and hanging out with a lot of adults. I give horseback riding lessons professionally out of our barn, and my question is it normal for only children to call their parents by their first name? My son likes to call me Heather, which is my first name, and I don't have a problem with it because the other kids in our barn that take lessons from me call me Heather, and so he stopped calling me Mama a long time ago when he noticed that he can get my attention by calling me Heather. And some people just don't understand why I would let him do that, and then other people tell me it's because he's an only child. So I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Well, that's very interesting. Well, I mean, this is not something that I would worry about, and I'm sure sooner or later he's going to remember your name is Mom. really. You know, it could be. Now, this is an interesting event in that, you know, if he's riding horses and you teach other children how to ride horses and he notices they call you Heather, that he may just be developing a little peer group there. So they call you Heather, so why shouldn't he call you Heather? I mean, so he's kind of taking on their role. And he also sees that, you know, as you pointed out, that you pay attention to him when he does that. And that's a great reward for him. You know, I don't think this is a major insidious event. It's just that he's using this as an opportunity to get your attention.
Hmm. I'm wondering if it's a problem. I'm not sure I like that. I'm just thinking about it may show a little lack of respect, but it also, when I think about it, puts your place in the outside world in a little bit of a question. So if you're at the grocery store and your son is calling you Heather instead of Mom, people don't exactly know, and maybe they don't need to know what your relationship is.
Yeah, it's possible. But, you know, I think it's probably going to be something that's relatively short-lived.
Okay.
That's my sense of it, and I wouldn't really worry terribly about it. I think that, you know, particularly if they're under certain circumstances you don't pay attention to him, particularly when he calls you Heather,
mm-hmm.
then, you know, he might just extinguish it on its own.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email from Bill. As an only child, I remember two key items while growing up: feeling left behind socially at times, and using my spare time role-playing and utilizing my imagination.
That sounds good. Sounds like fun.
What about feeling left behind socially at times? Do only children feel that way?
I think almost everybody feels that way. I see people from larger families, and you know that they may always have someone around, but you know the pretty sister gets the date, and the really bigger brother, he gets to be on the football team, and you know, I think even with people with siblings, they get the sense of, oh, I'm kind of being left behind, you know, and there's a little bit of anguish about it. So I think that's normal. I think learning how to cope with that and moving forward, you know, is something that's is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Anne in Oshkosh, hi.
Hi. I just feel I have three kids, and I would have felt, I can see the advantages to being, having, you know, your parents all to yourself, and I can see the advantages of growing up with siblings, but our childhood is such a short time in our life, and to consciously choose not to give siblings to your children, I think, is going to be a deficit throughout their lives. They'll be alone in the world when their parents die. They'll never be, you know, aunts and uncles to children that are related to them. They'll, you know, I just feel like it's a lifetime, not just 15 years of growing up without siblings, but you have an entire life without primary, you know, relationships like that. And I just think it's hard for me to understand how that couldn't be, you know, a deficit in the long term. That's my comment.
Yeah, well, that view, I think, is widespread. And because most humans grow up with siblings, so it just seems completely normal. And you can remember Christmas, and you can remember getting ready for school, and, you know, you can remember all of the events with the siblings together, and it just seems completely the proper way that things should be. And I think that's why there's a correlation between the number of siblings you have in general, not just you in particular, but people have in they correlate the number of kids they have with how many they grew up with, because it just seems normal. You know, you think, well, to have one other sibling or two or three other siblings, because that's what I had. And you know, and I think that that makes people feel safe and they feel proper about things. And I think that's why that people tend to keep repeating this. The objective evaluation of this is that, as it turns out, people who have no children at all or people who have just one child when they're senior citizens tend to do very well. Part of the reason is they did spend their whole life with no siblings. And so they've completely adjusted to this. They probably have a spouse. The spouse may have siblings. They have relatives, extended relatives through that connection. And then there are lots of only children or people who have no children at all who make other kinds of social networks. So it's not, you know, it's hard to imagine for people who had siblings not having them. And, of course, losing them would be a great, great personal misery for people who have siblings, but for those who never had them, for most people, you know, you just move on with others, and there are other people who, let's say, or you're graduated from high school with you, or you know, or people who work at a certain business with you. You know, you have these other cohort of social networks that you just have over your lifetime, and you don't end up, on average, being any worse off than other people.
Thank you, Anne. Here's an email from Judy in Milwaukee. I remember learning about studies in graduate school indicating that IQ scores decreased with birth order, with higher scores for the oldest, lower scores for younger children. Are these findings current?
You have to look at a very large cohort, you know, just like thousands and thousands of people to find this kind of effect. But I think that's a widely held finding. Part of the issue has to do with birth cohort and, you know, what time you were born, and also other factors that go on within a country. For example, in China now, you have, in urban China, you have almost all the young people are only children. And it's really, I think, elevated the skills, the academic skills, and the other types of work-related skills of the population simply due to that kind of little edge that has been given to those people. On the other hand, in the United States, we have people who are only children are more likely to come from single-parent families. They're also more likely to have significant disabilities. And so, you know, if you, you know, add those people into all the only children there are, you don't find, on average, as much of an advantage for only children. And so, because in the United States, generally speaking, the one-child family has not been that popular. So usually people end up in that kind of category because, the family got a divorce or the child was disabled, and so the parents said, we don't want to have a second as a result of
mm-hmm.
this.
Martha in Oconomowoc, hi.
Hi. It's good to hear this program. Of course, I've always been an only child. I have a lot of really early memories of being with a lot of adults. My father was a diplomat. He was Hungarian, and he got interred in Greenbrier in World War II.
Mm.
And my mother, who worked for Bell Telephone, thank God, grabbed me and took me back to Indiana with family. And I grew up there with mostly ladies from Nova Scotia, nurses from Nova Scotia. And they, because my mother worked, they were always there for me. And I learned so many things from them and got involved in all sorts of things. Always was a high achiever. But I missed family. So when I got married, I've had four children. They're all high achievers. I don't think there is any diminishing in because of birth order. They were all did very well in school and college, and we have our problems. I took care of them on my own at the last with the last child, and so it's been a struggle. But because they are optimistic people and talented in what they do, I think we're doing all right.
Good, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, my mother-in-law was an only child, and she married an only child. And these two only child, they had been children, during the Great Depression. And, you know, for them, being an only child wasn't an asset. You know, they felt my mother-in-law in particular, her parents really didn't let her go outside because they were so afraid that she would hurt herself or something. So she remembers looking out the window, seeing other kids playing, and she couldn't do it. So to make a long story short, they had six kids, and, they think it's wonderful to have a large family so that the siblings can interact with each other and have each other throughout life. So, you know, certainly that's certainly a reasonable response to all this.
Yes. I just remembering all the people in the neighborhood where I grew up in Indiana. All the women were there waiting for people to come back from the war. And the ladies that that took care of me during the day would visit everybody, and I would go with them. So I still had
great
adults
yeah
with me. There weren't a lot of children, but there were right after the war.
Hmm.
Right.
And I remember being one of seven in a particular class, and right behind me there were 45.
Oh, my goodness.
Those are the baby boomers.
The start of the baby
exactly
boom.
Yeah.
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 Thank you, Martha, so much for your call.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Seth is next on I-94. Hi, Seth.
Hi.
Hi.
I don't really have a question. I just have a couple different comments. My wife and I she's the oldest of seven, and I'm the youngest of seven. And I just think a single child, you never really have the same bond as what a sibling has. You don't feel the same love. I mean, it's an awkward situation because you can love the people so much, but when you fight, you can get into a big argument or whatever, and yet there's still the love there, and there's such a way of learning that lesson and stuff or whatever. And I have over 70 first cousins, and I mean the love I have for all these people and stuff or whatever. It's just, and you know they're always there for you, and I don't know. It's to me, it's just something that you would never experience as an only child, and And also, the one lady had commented on how she was felt so special because she had she was the only grandchild. Well, I mean, does she feel special because she's kind of spoiled, or is it just? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I had tons of cousins and still my grandparents or whatever, and I still felt special for my grandparents, you know.
Right. Well, thank you. And you're driving?
Yeah.
Well, drive safely. And you know, I think it's very reasonable to just assume like the family you grew up in is the right one, and that's really good because you have positive memories and you interact with your siblings and they all have children and you have sibling-in-laws and you know it's a big cohort there, and you know that works for many people but not everyone. And sometimes people, let's say, that the marriage doesn't last or they're don't have enough money, and or sometimes you have situations where some of the children have significant illnesses for a long period of time, and all this puts a tremendous stress on larger families. So, I mean, it doesn't mean if you have a large family, it can work out just great, and the people can be together for, you know, a long period of time and kind of spend a lifetime together. And other families, sometimes, you know, if you have a lot of siblings, you might not even live in the same state that they do and rarely see them. So, you know, families vary a great deal, and I, you know, it's what I like about the idea is that people have many different kinds of families, and you know, the same kind of family doesn't work for everybody.
And maybe this is my stereotype that I have about large families. In many ways, I envy them, but I also think, knowing family structures, that not everybody in families get along with each other, and to have. Some large families I know do virtually everything together, and I'm thinking, wow, wouldn't you want to go to your friend's house maybe or somebody that you've sort of nurtured and selected during your life and they're important to you as well, that there's an obligation to be there for reunions and be there for all these events, that it's determined that that's where you're going to be.
Right, right. Well, I think that if you grow up in a large family and you're married to someone in a very large family, it's probably family events that sort of determine the calendar, unless you're that one black sheep who decided to walk away. And particularly if you live relatively near each other, then you can kind of keep that social organization going. But that's not the most common in the United States. I mean, maybe in Utah. But outside of there, I'd say that, you know, people move, particularly if you get more education, you tend to move to many different parts of the United States or even abroad. And so you're not that close, you know, geographically speaking. You could be emotionally, and certainly nowadays with all the electronic media, you can Skype your family members even though they're abroad. So you can stay close, but, you know, it's... you know, I think people from large families have a hard time understanding is that people from small families have a social network and a social life, but it's not revolving around sibling and family events.
Yeah. We're talking about only children this hour of the program with Professor Tony Falbo, professor of educational psychology and sociology at the University of Texas at Austin and author of The Single Child Family. Our phone number, 800-486-8655. And if you'd like to send an email, you can do that, talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to more phone calls. Pam in Platteville. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted a couple comments. First of all, I'm a sixth child in my family, and sometimes that can be like being an only child because the age difference is so great when mom and dad were having those first children, and then they had you. The experience can be so different that it's almost like you're an only child. My oldest brother was 11 years older than I, and when my siblings would talk about experience of mom and dad taking them camping, or they were very different from what I experienced, and I had a lot of alone time with mom and dad because they had moved out. And second comment was, I really feel there's a push for, a cultural push, two kids, boy, girl. And when I look at my husband's family and my family, that's pretty much what everybody has tried to do. And only when there was three kids, there was one side of the family had twins, one side was a divorce and another marriage. Otherwise, everybody has those two kids, and mostly boy-girl. We ended up with two boys. But beyond that, I think there is more of a prejudice, and I feel it myself sometimes, with the people that decide to go beyond that, the people that show up at work and they're pregnant with their fifth kid. And I feel more of a angst against that than I do about couples that have one or none. And I wonder if you could comment on that, or maybe that's a future study.
Yeah, that's an interesting study. Let me just mention about lastborns. Sometimes lastborns are like only children in that, you know, all the older siblings have left home and you're the only one there. And sometimes the families, as they move along in life, they accumulate more wealth. Maybe they're earning more income. And so that experience of the lastborn can be very positive because, for example, my husband was a firstborn, and when he was growing up, he remembers eating beans a lot. And when he came home from graduate school once, he saw his lastborn brother, who was the only one living at home, actually got T-bone steak for dinner. And he was like going, "What?" So it gets to be a little bit, you know, the lastborn can be more like an only child in that there is more of that attention and more opportunity to get, you know, those kind of resources. Not that a T-bone steak is necessarily going to be that important. Then the other issue, I don't do research about people's views about large families. You know, I think that would be an interesting study. And perhaps, you know, somebody out there has been doing that. But, you know, I think there's a lot of kind of disgust even for, like, the octomom. You know, just people just regard it as sort of freakish. In the early 20th century, we had the cheaper by the dozen idea. And this is a book title that was based on actual family. There were dozen children. And these parents were very educated and were professionals, and they were efficiency experts, actually. And so they were doing this to demonstrate that you can have lots of kids and do it properly and so forth. And so I can think that that was a very positive view that we had in the early part of the 20th century about, you know, larger families are really great. But, you know, I think that things have shifted a little bit over time, even though there are a lot of Americans who like to watch large families on TV. You know, I think that somehow it just is either appealing. It could be, you know, curiosity. You know, I'm not sure. Now, about the two-child family, I think in general, over a long period of time in the United States, the two-child family is thought to be the most ideal. You know, when people say out of the blue, you know, how many kids, best number, they say
right,
two.
Right.
And this could be even for people who have no children at all, or one child, or five children, sometimes I think two, because, you know, you can have the multiple, you can have the sibling relationship without having to have such an extreme number of children that you really worry about resources.
And yet, even that is problematic. See, nothing is perfect. Here's an email from Chris. I had one girl and one boy, which I thought was perfect. Little did I know how much my daughter, now 24, needed a sister. She grew up perfect in every way with many high achievements. She tends toward a perfectionist personality and is struggling to find a job. I'm ending up being her best friend, and it's so hard. All the college friends have scattered. The struggle is phenomenal emotionally on both of us. Sure wish she had a sister.
Yeah, well, but see, the issue is, would that sister be there for her? You know, the sister may have moved
right
on to something else, and I think we can all imagine that it'd be great to have a sister, you know, who'd be there for us.
Right.
It'd be great, you know. And only a few of us are actually lucky enough to have that kind of an ideal person who's always there and helpful.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, maybe you can find a sister. In other words, I have this term called fictive kin. It's just kind of invent a sister. So you might be a good friend, might be a neighbor, might be, you know, a high school classmate, you graduated together, whatever. You know, this is a person who can become like your sister.
Sure.
And that maybe that's what is a good idea for this lady and her daughter, is to find a sister for her. This way she gets to pick the sister out.
Right. Thanks, Pam. Robert in Madison, hi.
Hi. I'm an only child who was also the only grandson of my mother's parents. And so we lived on a dairy farm in Minnesota, so the five of us there interacted together, and I was often almost included as an adult. But, of course, as a child on a dairy farm, the only child, it meant that I had to do the work of my brothers and sisters who were not there. And that meant that there was really, I could envy my friends on other farms because they seemed to have more free time than I did.
Yeah.
But on the upside of that, I was included in the decision-making, and I really, they interacted with me in such a way that it made me, I think gave me a very strong work ethic and also a strong sense of responsibility, which maybe at times was even a little bit too much to bear. Mm-hmm. But I certainly was able to convey that into my adult life in terms of educational achievements and that sort of thing, too. But the one thing that I do see now as I've gotten older is that I do miss having somebody to relate to who remembers my childhood, because I had so few cousins and they were more distant. My father's side, no siblings. And now when I look back, there are some things I'd like to recall, but it's difficult to have anybody to. Of course, there's nobody to recall that anymore.
Right. Did you have children, Robert?
Yes, two.
Two children.
Right.
Huh.
So at least you learn there that maybe it's better at least to have that sort of opportunity. And I think that it is really good in that manner, but it's not an impossible burden to bear at all. In fact, there certainly are advantages to it, being an only child.
Right. Well, yes. You know, your concern about not having someone to relate to, you know, who was there then, because all those people were adults and maybe they're not with us anymore. I mean, that's something I hear from a lot of people. But again, we have this sense that that person would be out there, and they may not actually ever have been. You may have had a sibling, and maybe he lives in California now, and you know, and is really into his own life and not particularly interested in remembering these things from the past. We can think about that would be wonderful. Now, again, thinking about fictive kin, I know nobody was there who's maybe still alive, but there may be somebody who had a similar experience and finding them kind of communicating with them. Maybe not exactly. They're going to remember exactly your farm, but they might have similar farm experiences, and you know, I think it's possible to network with these people and to be able to share, even though you weren't exactly there at the same time. You have similar experiences, so I think it's possible to fulfill that need in alternate ways.
His experience is probably unusual, isn't it, to grow up on a farm and have to do that much work as a child?
Yeah, that would be, you know, and I'm glad you called, Mister, because you know, people are often thinking only children have nothing to do and they're just lazy. But you know, I think on average, many only children end up doing a great deal of work.
Thank you, Robert, very much for the call. We have time for maybe one more call, maybe two. Keisha in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I just had a comment. I am the only child. I'll be 40 in November. I am divorced, and I do have a daughter now who has special needs, so she probably will be an only child, too. But my experience with being a single child, I really enjoyed it. When I was, you know, younger, like, you know, maybe before age of 10, I wanted siblings because that's what you see in society. A family is a mom and a dad and, you know, brothers, sisters. My mom is also a single parent. She was a nurse. So I had a middle-class background. My mom has siblings, and my mom is very outgoing. So I grew up in an outgoing type of family. Being that I had a mom who was single, I didn't have to share with siblings, I had a chance to go on trips with my mom, to go to dinner once a week, to get undivided time when it came to homework, or just talking and having personal time with her. Then I think my friends, who I did have a lot of friends growing up, I would go to their house and see that, you know, with three or four kids, the parents didn't always have the time to have individual discussions or time with their child.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I came home, I loved it because I could come home, I didn't have to worry about sharing with other people. My toys were new, not always, you know, broken down. So it gave me a sense of, when I came home, a calmness that this is all my things. I have my own space. I have my autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
And as I moved into teenage years, I really enjoyed that. And I've never been without friends. I've always been very gregarious, outgoing. That's what I saw from my mom. And so when one of the callers said, you know, you don't have anything to share, you know, if your parents die, you know, who you're going to have, you know, later in your life, it depends on the person. I have tons of friends
right.
who have children. So I'm never alone unless I want to be.
Yeah, friends can be family, that's for sure. We are out of time with that great call. Professor Falbo, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you.
Professor Tony Falbo, professor of educational psychology and sociology at the University of Texas at Austin and author of The Single Child Family. Thank you, Chrissy Pease, for producing this hour. Thank you, Chrissy Pease, for on-air production. We'll be with you again tomorrow.